Hello and welcome, dear listeners, to Subspace Radio. It is me, Rob.
And it's me, Kevin.
And we are back. A new episode of Star Trek is out there in the ether. So we are back to talk about Discovery Season 5, Episode 3.
Janal.
We are returning to Trill. We've already been there once before in Discovery, which I will go as so far to say one of my favorite episodes of Discovery. There are very few of them.
Who was it now?
Yeah, there were some good elements to it from what I can remember when I watched it all those years ago. I liked some elements of how they represented the Trill culture and definitely how the past lives and personalities of the Trill hosts sort of like unify together to become a community. I love those type of elements. So that was something I was not expecting and got me a bit emotional, but I have not done a recent rewatch like you.
Yeah, I mean, the short version of it is I think it was maybe just a little, it leaned a little too far into the mysticism that sometimes, you know, plagues alien cultures in Star Trek. When they get into those pools on Trill and they're trying to reconnect Adira with their past hosts in the Tal symbiont, the scenes that take place in that milky bath are, for me, a little too fantastical and magical. They get sucked under the water and like Burnham jumps in and she's like, where has she gone? Because Adira was still going by she back then. She's like swooshing through the water and it's like Adira's body vanished into the milk is what we are given to believe. There's this weird sphere that cracks that is supposed to indicate that Adira is in trouble. And then they go under the water, like Burnham also disappears into the milk, strangely. And then they're in this world of CG filaments that is very eye-popping. And I enjoyed it like I enjoy an expensively produced CG cutscene in a video game. But it lost all connection with the science in science fiction to me at that point. And coming back to this week's episode, I thought they like revisited all the same kind of fascinating alien culture stuff that you said you enjoyed about that old episode, but they took it back a notch in the magic department.
Very much so. Yeah, I loved the, I love the Trill culture. I really do. It's something, because I am a Doctor Who fan, it's Star Trek's version of Doctor Who. It really is.
Yeah, it sure is.
I could see the only way they could justify it is the Doctor Who type of magic of regeneration is to do it in this most complex of scientific ways with the Trills.
And that's what we're going to explore on this week's episode of Subspace Radio is the Trill, particularly memorable joined Trill. We said memorable, Rob, but when I went looking, there's not actually that many of them. We can get through them all, I think.
Yeah, like I spent a lot of my research and stuff just looking at past Dax incarnations and just how fascinating all, like, I think there's about 11 incarnations of Dax in one way, shape, or form. But yes, so they return to Trill, and this episode is very Indiana Jones. It's very adventure, solve the puddle to get to the next clue, to get to this, the high adventure aspects of it. So much so when their ambassador from Trill appears, they can only communicate further if the riddle is solved. And of course, Burnham's the only one who solves the riddle. To give them access to, you know, to get onto Trill, which I find hilarious. And there's
that is one of those antics. Things that I enjoyed it as well. And at the same time was conscious that I shouldn't think about this too much. Just go with it is what, like, there was a voice in my head saying, just go with it. To me, this is a, more than most Discovery episodes, this is a classic Star Trek episode structure. It felt like an episode of The Next Generation from the 80s or 90s to me. It had three plots, none of which were strong enough or well enough executed that they would have carried an episode on their own. But somehow together, by constantly cutting between them, they kept my interest. And the overall sense was just comfort food for me. Like, this was not a great episode of Star Trek. This was not a terrible episode of Star Trek. It was one that I could just feel like, oh yeah, I'm home. This is Star Trek when it is normal.
Yeah, it felt very normal. I mean, do we have three or do we have, I'm trying to like, or do we have four?
Yeah, if you count Adira and Gray breaking up on Trill, that's maybe a fourth, but I would call that like plot A1 instead of just A, yeah.
Yes, so basically we had the main plot, which, well, main plot I'm doing in inverted commas, of trying to find the next piece of this puzzle that will lead them to the, the technology to save all technology.
X-Files fans used to call it, the mythology thread.
Damn right, damn right. We also had Saru going through his growing
Saru's
pains
back.
Of...
Guess what? Saru's still on the show.
After all our talk last week, is he gone? Is he up? Nope, he's there. He's right there.
He's just got a new job.
Yep. His growing pains of getting used to being an ambassador and how that works with his new relationship and how they communicate and how they respond to stressful situations or tension within their relationship, which was quite adorable.
And then Rayner's one-on-ones on the ship with Tilly.
Rayner's one-on-ones. And then also the sub-plot, doing my Jack Black there, of the breakup of our two young star-crossed lovers.
For me, the highlight of this episode was Wilson Cruz playing Janal embodied.
Yes. So this is the A plot where they have to go back to Trill because the only way that the clues will be given if they go through some ancient Trill ceremony where that persona is passed on into a willing host. Just the persona, not the actual symbiont that stays within the present host.
Yeah, in a ritual, the Zintara ritual, which has been seen twice before, once in a classic DS9 episode called Facets, where we got to meet all of Dax's previous hosts.
You're going to see me talking about that a lot.
And the other one, we saw it recently in Discovery in Choose to Live, which I think may have been the very next episode after you gave up on season 4. And that's the one where they put Gray into an artificial body. So if you're wondering who this Gray is, or I guess you got to meet Gray, but last time you knew Gray was not in physical form. They performed a Zintara ritual to unjoin Gray from the Tal symbiont and put them in a Dr. Soong-style golem, they call it, but an artificial body, just like Picard has.
A Picard body, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, I was aware that, Gray was... could only be seen by Adira.
Not anymore. Gray's walking around and talking around now.
Gray has been given a body. And so I just saw that and went, all right, okay, so something happened.
All right. Yeah, stuff happened. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it was a Zintara ritual that happened.
Bless them. So, yes, we had our doctor go around with this ancient personality Trill and taking them to the location of the next clue. But little did they know, Burnham and Book are going through a trial of their own to see whether they are worthy enough to receive this next clue, because this clue could change the face of the universe.
Yeah, lots of hijinks. What's a season of Star Trek without a walk through a strangely lit quarry? You know, we get those every now and
very
then.
Very Doctor Who.
We are fulfilling our quota this season. Some of this stuff felt a little padded out to me, like the, do we go on 3 or after 3?
Oh.
How many times, just in Star Trek, have we seen that scene?
Yeah.
And those scenes were also, like, they were going slow for me. It seemed like they were performing them slow, like they had time to fill in the episode. I don't know if you felt the same way, but some of that stuff I was kind of like, okay, maybe I'm just getting old, but I've heard these gags 10 times now. It doesn't feel fresh to me anymore. But what I did enjoy was Janal's retelling of the history of the group of scientists that came together after the chase in Star Trek The Next Generation and worked across cultures, across species to research and ultimately find the technology of the progenitors.
Yeah, it was, that whole sequence was very much reminded me of that episode of the animated series we watched when they went back to Vulcan and you find out, oh, okay, Vulcan has big giant pet tigers and all these huge creatures that run around. And where they go, all right, so Trill's the same. They've got these huge...
It's got cloaking bees that spit fire.
Yes. Okay, this is our reality now. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy the end of it when they finally, you know, went the high moral ground and said they'd come back later and they wouldn't kill these creatures.
Yeah, that was good Star Trek stuff.
That's Star Trek. It's not about force. It's about heart and mind. And to have that beautiful moment with Janelle sitting there, just enjoying that sunset for the final time or enjoying that breath when that was quite beautiful. And when
playing such a distinct and yet still very charismatic and fleshed out character, like, I really enjoyed Wilson Cruz flexing his acting muscles in a way that I hadn't seen before. Enjoyable.
Wilson Cruz was exceptional in this episode. One of my big, I've talked about him before. Matt Baum is a great pop culture YouTuber and stuff like that. And he's at the moment going through My So-Called Life, the Claire Danes show from the 90s. And Jared Leto was on that. And Cruz was on that TV show. He got one of his big breaks on that. So I saw a young version of him running around. I'm going, there we go, the Doctor in different timelines.
Yeah.
But he was exceptional in this episode, shifting characters so simply and beautifully.
Ultimately, what we learn is that they discovered this technology at a time where the Dominion War was raging.
And yes,
they made the decision that the galaxy or the evolved species of the Alpha and Beta quadrants are not ready for this technology. They're not able to use it responsibly. If it gets out now, it will be misused as a tool of war. So we're going to put it in a time capsule with a bunch of riddles locking it, and someone someday will be worthy of this. And here we have Book and Burnham kind of being asked a bunch of questions about that amount to, are you worthy? And I liked that moment where he turned to Burnham and said, you don't look so sure. And she said, look, it is a time of peace, but progress isn't linear. I can't say it'll last. I liked the shades of gray of that.
Yes.
At the same time, we are 800, 900,000 years, I forget the exact number, into the future from that Dominion War. But I look at what we know of Starfleet and the Federation and the rest of the galaxy in this time, and I ask myself, is it really that different? Like, is the only practical difference that there isn't a war raging? Is that the only reason that they're going to let this technology out? Or are we meant to believe that humanity has leapt some significant hurdle of evolution that makes them worthy now in a way that they weren't in the 24th century? Because I feel like Captain Picard could have answered those 20 questions in the quarry just as effectively as Book and Burnham. What are we meant to believe has changed in the galaxy? I'm not really sure.
And we haven't really, you know, seen it that much. I mean, I've watched the full season of their first time in the future. I've obviously skipped season 4. So I haven't seen as much of a clear distinction apart from how they treat technology. I haven't seen that full evolution to find any evidence that they have evolved to the point where they are ready and not just, you know, the same type of stuff they do in regular Star Trek, just with a different star date on it.
Well, I mean, for the record, having seen that season that you haven't, nothing happened there that convinced me that this is a particularly evolved, enlightened time for the galaxy. So in that sense, I mean, if that's what's going through Burnham's head in that moment, I kind of like that doubt. And I wonder if it's going to play into how this season eventually resolves.
We can, but only hope.
The one-on-ones with Rayner were hilarious.
I loved them for the same reason I adored Pike coming in at the start of season 2, where he pretty much came in and said, I don't know any of you, tell me your names.
He was so much nicer about it, though.
But for me, it was also that case of, I've mentioned it many times before, Star Trek works as an ensemble, like the original series.
Right, so getting to meet some of these characters as an audience.
Yeah, the original series was very much our three leads and the rest was supporting. Next Gen was very much shaped as an ensemble. And through the course of the 7 years, there's sort of like the importance shifted because of the performances and the writing. So, and Deep Space Nine was very ensemble as well, as was Voyager. But this has been very much, you know, as I've said many times before, Burnham's show, and everybody else is supporting. So I enjoyed Pike coming in, being very nice and going, introduce me to all of this crew that we've known for a year, but we don't know any of their names. And so to have a more, you know, mean version of it come in, for me, it also knocked out the smugness of Discovery. Of the Discovery cast going, yeah, we're great, we're cool, we're awesome, we're amazing, we're brilliant, we get on so well.
Let me tell you about my hobbies.
Yeah, let's talk about this. And Tilly, they're going, yeah, we're all really cool. And he's going, I don't really care. So I like the outsider coming in going, you're not all that.
Yeah, and I'll also agree with you that this also, despite that more cynical lens on it, some of the glimpses of these characters that we got were intriguing. Like some of these people,
I thought,
wow, you know, you've been standing there for four seasons and I just see now you're an awesome actor. And I would love to see a story about you.
This is what we talked about last week, about the way that storytelling has shifted, how we consume media has shifted so much that we do not have 24 episodes a season anymore. So those arcs of characters, that familiarity is gone and we have to connect with characters so much quicker. But that is a clear indication of how badly Discovery has been structured as a show, that we are five seasons deep into this and you're only now looking at these people go, oh wow, you're a really good actor, you deserve more than just standing around looking at Michael Burnham impressed. And they're going, all these characters were so fascinating that we should have seen more of them over four seasons. More subplots, more them going on away missions and stuff like that. You can't give all the heavy lifting to Tig.
Tig Notaro, who wants chips.
Yeah, you can't give all the heavy lifting to Tig Notaro. They are amazing and incredible and brilliant, and they can just be charming in their sleep, apparently. Not that I would know. But yeah, I was just there going, that's a disservice to your incredible cast that they are only there to service your lead actor, which is not what Star Trek is about. Star Trek is a group of people working together and we learn to survive with all of them and love them all.
Yeah. I still can't see where they're taking Rainer this season. Like, he's not exactly redeemed at the end of this episode.
No.
And so is he going to continue to be an anti-hero, or is he a secret villain for this season? Like, is he eventually going to, you know, make a bad call for his career and mutiny because he does not believe in Burnham's style of command? Like, I wonder where that's going.
And loop it around, because Burnham was, you know, the traitor and mutinied on the first season of the first episode.
There was a little hint dropped when we got Stamets's report in these scenes. He just dropped the mention that this technology can reanimate dead organisms. And I went, oop, that feels like a promise.
Yes.
That feels like a hint at the climax of this season. Someone's going to die and we're going to face a dilemma of whether to use this technology to resurrect them or not.
Bring them back to life. Yeah.
And then we had the wedding plans.
Yes, we did. And it was very high school drama in very, very much. Okay, we're on the same committee together and we're sharing ideas.
I don't know. The high school drama for me was Adira and Gray, but we'll come to that.
That was very, very high school because they're very much just out of high school, those wonderful actors.
Yeah, the negotiations about who's going to get a star base, and there's the snake man sitting there who never says anything. And
never says anything.
When they go to a break, everyone pairs up and starts having chats, but the snake man sits there all alone.
Aww.
No one wants to talk to the snake man, Rob.
Why don't you want to talk to the snake man?
I enjoyed this glimpse into, you know, to use a Star Wars term, the trade negotiations of the Federation. I wouldn't want to spend every week here, but it was fun to be a part of.
Yeah, and to see Saru adjusting to that. He's quite the diplomat and the well-spoken character. So he does fit into this world very easily.
He does. He's very Vulcan when he's in a relationship with a Vulcan, I have to say. There were several moments where I was thinking, I need a little more chemistry between you two if I am to believe that you are madly in love with each other. The fact that they, his wife-to-be compliments his handsomeness and eruditeness in a memo, in a public statement.
I do love that. I did actually like that very much. I had a little giggle going, oh, that's cute. Actually quite cute.
It's cute, but I don't feel any heat between them in the way that we kind of got there was a tingling of it when it was will they, won't they, will they acknowledge their feelings or not. But now that they've acknowledged their feelings, it's kind of evaporated to me.
It's the Lois and Clark thing, you know?
Yeah.
The whole, New Adventures of Superman was amazing and hot and incredible. Will Lois and Clark get together? And as soon as they did, everyone went, nope, that's it. We don't want it anymore. And it's the
after
same thing
after they
have
here. Their fight. And Saru admits to her, I have been terribly uneasy since our tea. I just thought, ugh, there's no passion in any of this.
Yeah, I like the attempt. I mean, I can't believe I'm justifying it. I like the attempt at a different form of relationship tension. So it's not all, especially we come off Book and Burnham who are, all that melodramatic, over the top, emotional drama to have it reserved back within this Vulcan, infused.
Yeah, totally. And I'm here for the Vulcan verbal gymnastics as well. When Saru is talking with Duvin and Duvin's saying, let me see if I can get this right. I think Tarina is overcome by her emotions, but you're an emotional being, so you're always overcome by your emotions. So I think you can handle it better. Like, that was the logic. And Saru says, your logic is a bit circuitous. And I thought, great, that's fun. They're playing with it. It's playful.
Yeah, I can see the attempt. But yeah, I agree with you. It didn't completely work because I am not feeling any heat. Yes, there is no warmth. There can be warmth. Like we talked about last week about, Star Trek is very good at showing warmth with little words or as little, the expression comes through the minimalism of it.
I mean, you think back to Spock and to Pring in Strange New Worlds, and they're like getting out of bed topless with each other. And there is heat there. And I don't know if just Tarina is a different kind of Vulcan woman. But I just want a little bit more of that Strange New World hot Vulcan.
Look, when a Canadian asks for more heat, you give it to them, all right?
So then the last beat in this one was Adira and Gray. It was funny going back and watching Forget Me Not, which was kind of the second episode for Adira and the first episode for Gray in Discovery, and watching those characters as they were first introduced to us. I enjoyed those characters so much more in those formative stages. I don't know if it's because Gray was playing a different version of Gray, who was joined and had the wisdom of the Tal symbiont in him, or if Adira was playing a different version of Adira, who still hadn't figured out what it was to be a joined Trill. They were still a human who was saying, calling the symbiont my squid in those early episodes, because they didn't fully understand what they had been gifted with as a joined entity. And all that early stuff, I don't know if it's me, but the acting seemed much more polished and considered. Yeah. The characters seemed deeper and more interesting. And here in what I might guess might be the last time we see Gray in this series is... It feels like they have regressed to high school relationship tropes, and it's not being played particularly subtly, or at least not in a way I personally enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like what they were doing with Saru is that case of I could see what they're attempting, especially I like the idea of when we saw them, they were quite young, impulsive, and finding out what love is and what their connection is, and the longing because they're only in my mind type of stuff.
Yeah.
And from what I could tell, they were trying to show this evolution and this maturity growing in them, and how these two people who love each other, their lives have kind of faded away, and this acknowledgement of going, we aren't where we were. We're not who we were. And I like that attempt to show, some relationships end in a bang, some end in a whimper, and some, some just fade. And I like that attempt to show a fade of something that burnt so bright and so strong and was so young. It was a very young love when it started out.
I think I don't mind the writing, but it's something in either the direction or the performances that isn't working for me. Like that first scene in this episode in the engine room where Deer is getting ready to go and meet Gray and is nervous. They are stammering and huffing and stuttering in a way that it is so overplayed how nervous they are meant to be. And then Stamets is standing there, and the comedy is meant to be that he is so clueless as a father that he doesn't notice.
Yeah.
But to me, that scene would have worked better if the nervousness had been underplayed and Jet Reno's the only one who can see it. And I think it would have done more credit to the character of Adira, because Adira is being played so immature now. Going back and watching their very first appearance in the series, even before they had access to the experience of this, hundreds of years old entity inside them, they were already being played more mature in those original couple of episodes than they are now. It's something about the maturity of the performance has gone away in a way that bothers me.
I agree. Yeah, they missed out on something being quite powerful and a beautiful little send-off of that relationship, and they kind of misstepped.
So let us take this moment then, as we're talking about Adira, a joined Trill, to segue into our topic for this week, which is all of the joined Trill. I made a list because it's not that long, and I think, Rob, I suggested to you that we rate them, but ever since I made that suggestion, I've been getting more and more uncomfortable with it because it feels like we are rating people, and I'm not sure how we would do that. Are we rating the performances? Are we rating the stories? Are we rating, I don't know, something else? None of it feels good or useful.
And especially with some of them, we see multiple interpretations of that character by different actors, whether it be in flashback with a different actor or then in facets. We had, actors we know from the regular cast, embodying that character.
Those other hosts, To me, there are the featured joined Trill here, the people who are stars or like guest stars of an entire episode. And we see them as they are at that point in their life. And in that sense, I feel like Jadzia Dax and Ezri Dax are both fully formed characters that we might consider separately. But then there are these former hosts that we are told about, or we get to meet in a flashback or in a fleeting encounter. And I feel like we can set all of those aside. And I'm interested in considering these, characters we have properly met and fleshed out. And for me, they are Odan on Star Trek The Next Generation, the original Trill.
Yes.
Jadzia. There is Lenara Khan, who is Jadzia's ex-wife, or a ex-wife of a former Dax host.
Yes.
And there's Ezri.
Yeah.
There's Adira Tal in Discovery. And there is Janal Bix, who we met this week. Kinda, sorta. I don't even know if we want to put Janal on the list.
Well, yeah, I did the exact opposite. I just did a full deep dive into the former lives of all the Daxes because I got so engrossed on there. This is absolutely fascinating because it's like a history of the Federation as well as all this type of stuff. So,
well, why don't you take us through the Dax history, and then I will take my research into the other Trill as a compare and contrast at the end.
Beautiful. All right. So, okay, if we're looking at Facets, which is season 3, episode 25 of Deep Space Nine, Jadzia goes through the process of having one-on-one conversations with all her previous incarnations, using a Doctor Who term. And the spirit of that incarnation goes into another host form. And so the actors throughout Deep Space Nine fill those roles.
Something that's happened several times where we've gotten to see those actors play different characters. And I think we've talked about that on a previous episode.
Love it. That's what, yeah, I love most about the Deep Space Nine cast. It's the most consistent of quality of actors. And they show that in all seven seasons of going, check out our Bond episode, check out our Butter Bing episode, check out this episode here. We see the variety, the episode where they're all completely different characters, 1950s with Benjamin Sisko being a Black Rider in the 1950s. So we start off with the first incarnation, which is Leela Dax, played by Kira. Jadzia gets holding her hands behind her back from Leela.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very powerful figure. We have Tobin Dax is the second one with O'Brien. O'Brien's an engineer. Tobin was an engineer. And Tobin was a bit of a man about town. Had quite a few relationships under his belt.
But also kind of a fidgety, kind of funny little dude, right?
Biting his nails.
Yeah. He's almost a Ferengi, I felt like.
Very Ferengi-esque.
Yeah.
We have Imoni Dax, which we had Leta fill in that role. Chase Masterson doing a great job, who was an Olympic gymnast, if you can believe that, and had an affair with a very young Lyndon McCoy back in the day.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's great.
Yeah, very, very cute. Very, very cute. Then we have Audred.
Mm-hmm.
Audred Dax, played by Armin Shimerman's Quark, filled in there. This incarnation had problems within her domestic life. Didn't speak to her daughter for years until they got to reconcile at the end. We then move on to Torius Dax. And this is the incarnation who was married to Lenara. They're an adventurer, a thrill seeker who eventually died in a shuttle accident. And that was Julian Bashir filling that role, which is quite quite funny, because especially with the connection with Julian having the hots for Jadzia at the start.
Yeah.
Now, the next one. This is the most fascinating one for me. This is Joran. Joran Dax.
The murderer.
The murderer. The serial killer. And he comes back in a season 7 episode with Esri, because Esri's trying to hunt down a serial killer within Deep Space Nine. It's a great episode, yeah. Really.
This host was originally kind of erased or hidden, right? It came out in an early episode.
Yes. The Trill Council erased the memories, they held back the memories from Jadzia getting access to them, because this was a blight on that whole symbiont experience, because only the best of the best could hold onto a symbiont. And Joran was a musician, a very famous musician, and turns out that he was a psychopath and killed people. But they had to go through this process so that Jadzia could get access to those memories and prove that that would make, they would not consume her. They would actually better her as a Trill symbiont host. And he comes back as a memory within Esri Dax, and Esri Dax is almost manipulated into killing herself because Joran wants her to feel what it's like. Fascinating stuff. Great stuff. Joran's a great incarnation. We got little tastes of him more than any of the others. We then have Curzon just before, which we know so much about.
Old man,
his relationship with Sisko. There's a previous episode with, he had an affair with a hierarch member from a different planet with the whole war raging.
I like Curzon because we are given to believe that he was both a hard ass who believed intensely in things being done well or right. He would have been your most strict professor at university, like that is Curzon. And at the same time, he was a complete party animal womanizer in his private life.
And as his Jadzia describes, he fell in love with everyone. He fell in love with every woman he met. And pretty much every other week he was in love. And he indeed fell in love with Jadzia. That's why he originally refused her because he was on the council of Trill for being selected, and because he had fallen for Jadzia, he would do it. played by René Auberjonois in Facets. So like his whole shape shifting phase became more trill. He had a bit more of his expressions, got to go out and meet Sisko and have a drink and all that type of experience. Really bring Curzon to life. And René Auberjonois, may he rest in peace, one of the great actors ever to appear on Star Trek. Mm. Curzon, we know a lot about Curzon just from, you know, all that time.
And that brings us up to Jadzia.
Jadzia and Ezri are the ones that we know. Of course, if it wasn't for ill treatment and poor negotiations from behalf of the producers, we would have not had the end of Jadzia Dax. But, you know, Terry Farrell had to look out for herself and look after herself. And she was definitely not being looked after by the producers on Star Trek. And she moves on.
It's hard to separate our assessment or reflection on these characters from what we now know went on behind the scenes.
Yes, very much so.
But I'd like to try anyway, and just like for what appeared on screen, how do you think of Jadzia and Ezri as two different people? And what's interesting about that to you?
Yeah, I mean, I believe that Nicola DeBorg, who played Ezri, had the harder job, whereas Terry Farrell had 5 seasons to develop the character. And as we've already discussed before, she was very much going under the direction of play in her first season, playing Jadzia very cool, very calm, hands behind the back all the time, and not really allowed to bring any real personality. So it took her about a season or two before she started to loosen up and, you know, play card games and drink and all that type of stuff, bring that element of Terry Farrell's dynamic personality as an actor to the role.
And the writers responding to it and then putting it in the scripts.
Beautiful.
And yeah, it was a true partnership finding that character.
As with all good television shows are, it's about the longer you stay on a show, the more the writers are inspired by you, the person, and what you bring to it. So Nicola had the tough job of having to make those big character leaps very quickly. Also, it was a bit of a complication for me turning her Ezri into a counselor. And there was a lot of interplay about that. I don't know you. I don't trust you. You're very young. How can I open up to you?
And just the role of counselor has always been kind of fraught in Star Trek. I mean, famously, Troy was an underused character, and the writers didn't know what to do with her, and the actor felt underused as a result or ill-served. And to cast your new Dax in the role of a counselor, on the one hand, it fits in the universe because that's an established role. On the other hand, it is not an easy role to make your own and make powerful in a show, especially when you've got just the last year or so to do it.
Yeah, I mean, psychology has evolved so much just within the last 30 years. And so trying to present a futuristic view of psychology from a 1980s point of view and then slowly evolving in the 1990s has always been tricky. But I love both interpretations of Dax. I love all the interpretations, really, all the incarnations. And I think both Nicola and Terry bring different energies, and both are worthy and both are acceptable. Just like with Doctor Who, you bring your own personality to the incarnation. You don't play a type of character. You play your version of it. That's what I love about both those incarnations.
I think we are supposed to see in the performances, and I do, and in the writing as well, that in some ways Jadzia is a more knowing and confident presence, whereas Ezri
Definitely.
Is more self-doubting and unsure. I don't know if that is just meant to be their age, but it feels to me more like a character choice or a character design choice.
And it is also the case of Jadzia went through the trials and the process to become a host, whereas Ezri, you know, was an emergency. They just had to do it straight away because the symbiote was dying on the way back to Trill.
A proto Adira, if you will. I mean, that accounts for Adira's relative inexperience, the fact that they are meeting the experience of being joined with wide open eyes and fear and wonder as well, in the same way that Ezri did.
Very much so. And I mean, you see how the influences are. Jadzia very much embraces Sisko straight away, and they become friends almost instantly because of that connection with Curzon. Mm. Whereas Sisko is quite suspicious at the start of season 7 of welcoming in another Dax that is connected to not only Curzon's memory, but Jadzia's. And how Ezri deals with that is a big part of the drama that evolves over that season, of how she fits and how she wants to be perceived by the people she knew, but also see the new version of her. It's, yeah, very clever writing to bring in the final season.
So since we're talking about Dax anyway, let's talk briefly about Lenara Khan, who comes in an episode called Rejoined, season 4, episode 6 of Deep Space Nine.
A controversial episode.
Well, yeah. I mean, the famous same-sex kiss between Dax and Khan is a vivid memory in the young minds of many Deep Space Nine fans like you and I dare say.
Very much so.
And broke new ground on television.
Very much broke new ground and very much a product of the time. There are so many barriers put up to get to the point where they have the very intimate, beautiful kiss between the two of them.
Yes. Not only is it taboo in the real world of the typical American TV viewer, but it is taboo in the fiction of Deep Space Nine, where Trill are not meant to reassociate with previous romantic partners.
And very much is the case of any type of representation of the LGBTIQ community. Stories about them are always twisted in a tragic bent. There's no real, at that time, most of the stories that we would see, whether it be Philadelphia, it's a case of the pain, the punishment, the drama, as opposed to showing just, you know, a happy, positive relationship. It's all fraught with, oh, this is doomed. Oh, this is tragic. Oh, this isn't going to work.
And yet you can see like the merit of what they were attempting here. And in the context of the time, radically succeeded in, is that they set aside the taboo of the same-sex relationship and made that completely a non-issue in Star Trek. But then they used the allegory of the Trill taboo in order to make that rejoining and ultimately that kiss a shocking thing in the fiction of the show. And it allowed us to explore our reactions to that as an audience, free of the modern prejudices that existed at the time and still persist today.
Exactly. It's a masterpiece of writing to be able to, it seems as if society at that time and producers at the time and the network at the time laid down all these restrictions.
Yes.
And so the writers said, we've got to work within that.
Yes.
But we will still tell this story. And the fact that despite all these restrictions, it still works today. It's a beautiful episode. It's a beautiful story. And you can take, like you said, take away all those other restrictions that they've added on. You can see this, you know, doomed relationship that, you know, and this heartbreak at the end where, you know, Lenara chooses Trill custom over, over her heart.
I mean, ultimately, this was not a story of queer characters. It was not a centering of queer characters in pop culture. I mean, we are getting that with Adira and Gray now in Discovery, and that's excellent. Back then, the Deep Space Nine audience, or at least the studio making it, was not ready for that. What it did do, though, is put a same-sex relationship on a screen in a way that would invite the audience to examine their reaction to that. And that has value in its own way.
And there is comparisons, like we were talking about with the breakup in this most recent episode of Discovery. It isn't in any, it's sad, but it's two characters just drifting apart. It's not this tragic end. It's just going, look, we still love and respect each other, but we've kind of moved on.
Yes. And I take your point that there is value to showing that as normal. Like those relationships start and end just like any other normal relationship does.
And it's got nothing to do with their sexuality. It's all to do with just them as people, which is great evolution that we have come through. But you're right. This story from Deep Space Nine is not a queer story, but it can be seen through those eyes. But all those restrictions made it very, very clear that, you know, it's a very heteronormative time.
Yeah. And beyond all of the work it was doing as a pioneering episode in pop culture, exploring these social issues in its own way at the time, besides all that, it is a really great performance by both of these women, and both especially actors, yeah. Terry Farrell as Jadzia Dax. To me, this might be the best acting we get from Terry Farrell in the entire series. I don't know. I have not done a full watch of Deep Space Nine lately. I might be forgetting some very obvious examples of her knocking down the house. But I watched this one just yesterday, and it brought me to tears all over again. And yeah. I saw subtlety and richness and multiple layers to her character and her, you know, the past character of Tarius Dax, who was married to Nilani Khan. Like, I feel like I got to know a little more about Tarius in this episode through Jadzia's yeah. performance, and that is a remarkable achievement. And whoever cast that guest star did a great job, because she did a great job as well. I felt like she matched Terry Farrell for gravitas and for depth of performance, and I felt like there was just as much a character. There were deep, rich characters on both sides of this relationship that we got to experience in this one episode.
Susanna Thompson did an incredible job. Yeah, the connection between Thompson and Farrell is amazing. Their chemistry is incredible.
So yeah, that was Lenara Khan. And then the last joined trill I think it's worth talking about is going way back to the beginning and rewinding to the host in Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 4, Episode 23, where we meet Odan, the first trill. Did you ever watch this episode?
We did. We reviewed it.
Ooh.
We reviewed it a while back. Yeah, so that was my first a while back. Gee, what type of terminology is that? I remember watching it. I got a little bit annoyed by it, but you
I could understand that. If you were going back as a fan of the Trill and watching this as the introduction, you would be annoyed by how many things are wrong about the Trill in this episode.
I felt very much like Krusty the Clown in that episode of The Simpsons, watching the cartoon from the German cat and mouse, and I'm just there with a cigarette in my mouth going, what the hell is that?
It does feel like someone heard secondhand someone talk about what the Trill were, and they attempted to recreate them from what they half remembered.
Yes.
It's similar but different.
So, yes. I mean, we learned stuff that, you know, the forehead ridges were taken off because Terry Farrell didn't look hot in them, but it introduced us to the awesome dots on the skin, which I find far more fascinating as a creature creation. I love that. And yes, we find out like there's almost like a robotic change. Like when the new version
when
comes
the new
in.
Host comes and she goes, I am here to become Odan's new host. Like, yeah, the implication is that these hosts are empty husks.
They're empty husks. The personality is within the symbiont.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I love they've evolved evolved out of that, because
it's so much more interesting where they got to on the second try.
So much more interesting. Yes.
Here's a tidbit for you. This is full credit to Memory Alpha on this. It says the difference between this symbiont and ones shown later was explained in the non-canon novel Forged in Fire, which explained that the ridged Trill, such as Odan's hosts, were the result of a strain of the Klingon augment virus that managed to infect a Trill colony through visiting Klingon traders. What do you think of that? It all links back to Enterprise, Rob. At the end of the day, Enterprise always explains everything.
Ah, of course. Enterprise is the hidden gem. You know what? Enterprise is the greatest Star Trek series of all time. I could never finish that. I could never finish it. Look, I love fan fiction.
There's stuff like the very first, like the cold open for this episode, Odan returns to his quarters and in front of the mirror, like opens his shirt and his stomach is pulsing and he needs to like blast it with a little laser beam to get it to calm down. Oh,
and it's a case of nobody like, and they're not, the Trill culture isn't known about.
No, it's kind of secretive. And again, people who do backflips to make things make sense in canon they say that this event where O'Don is revealed in this episode of The Next Generation was actually the coming out, if you will, of the Trill species as symbionts, or that some of them anyway are symbionts,
yeah.
Is that, yeah, that was somewhat secretive and private up until that point. And yeah, that's not at all on screen. It's just stories we tell ourselves after the fact.
It's very interesting to see how it evolves and how, just from that first episode, the host, and what we get at now, even with Discovery, you can look at it the same way as with Doctor Who as well, because Doctor Who had different people take over and shift, but you can still see elements of the first Doctor, even in Shitty Gatwa. You can see components of it. But with this, it's a sense of, apart from the fact there is a host and there's a symbiont inside, there's very, very little that you can see familiar.
O'Don was designed as a monster of the week, if you'll accept that term. And designed specifically for the effect that character would have, or that alien would have on the characters we know. Beverly, who'd fallen in love unknowingly with a symbiont, and Riker, who ends up playing host in that episode.
Dear old Beverly, looking for love in all the wrong places.
O'Don didn't even have two names. So, like, O'Don is the symbiont. We don't even know the name of the host.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. It could be, you know, Derek O'Don.
Well, it there was William O'Don temporarily.
Yeah, should have the two name facets.
As I rewatched this episode, there was some real 90s pan flute action in the score when Beverly was wrestling with her emotions. She's looking across 10 forward at this man, Riker, who is meant to be the man that she's in love with, but she can't quite bring herself to accept that. And Troy is saying, if you can feel those things from the man we know as Will Riker, accept them. Accept the love. That's the professional advice from Troy, the counselor.
And then when O'Don comes in as a woman, she just goes, too much. That's too much.
Well, it was fun going down memory lane of the Trill and their joined characters. It's kind of neat that there are still, you know, so few of them that you can count them on one hand. And it feels like there's still plenty to be explored and told about this race.
Oh, there's even two Daxes we didn't even get to. There's Varad Dax, played by John Glover, who hijacks the symbiont of Jadzia.
Freaking interesting episode, that one. Like,
very.
Yeah, what do you do when the kidnapped becomes the kidnapper, or the kidnapper becomes the kidnapped? Like, yeah, so weird. That's another Tuvix story.
Yes, it's very Tuvix, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just it's a very melancholy, not even very sad, bleak ending of nobody dies, but it's a violation.
Yeah.
And who has a right to who? There's also Yedrin Dax in the alternate one where
they get trapped on in the time bubble sort of thing.
Yes.
And we see their future generations.
Jadzia dies and passes on to her son, and this son tries to keep the Defiant crew there because they want their life to keep on going, but they have to go back. And so that entire population of thousands of people are wiped out. So
yeah, I didn't like that Dax. That was not a Dax I enjoyed.
Yeah, no, we much prefer the serial killer Dax over that. At least the serial killer Dax helped in some way. Am I going to regret saying that? Maybe. But yes, so that is the end of our look at episode 3 of Discovery season 5. We had a bit of a stroll down Trill Lane. I did like that moment at the end, though, when the symbiont went back into the pool and we kind of saw it just swim off. That was kind of a beautiful little moment. And we'll be swimming back here next week to talk about episode 4.